Breaking news today on Jay Sekulow Live. Attorney General Barr expands the U.S. attorneys looking into the misconduct and potential criminal actions by the Obama administration.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
John Durham, as part of his investigation, had been looking at the issue of unmasking, and the attorney general determined that certain aspects of unmasking needed to be reviewed separately as a support to John Durham's investigation. So he tapped John Bash, one of our U.S. attorneys out of Texas, to do just that.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
We know that unmasking inherently isn't wrong, but certainly the frequency, the motivation, and the reasoning behind unmasking can be problematic.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Think about this. This is the third U.S. attorney now that's been appointed by the Department of Justice to look into potential criminal misconduct. Now, the most high profile has been John Durham, who is leading the investigation. And these are criminal investigations. That's why you appoint U.S. attorneys. You can do inspector general's reports on things that may have gone wrong. You can do, even if you're not using the IG world, you could do self-studies if you thought it was just maybe we need to change our policies. But you do this when you suspect there may have been some kind of foul play involved, that the government actors were misusing their positions of power in a way that is potentially criminal. Now, again, this is unique because in this matter, again, it's a U.S. attorney outside of Washington, D.C., so they're not in that D.C. world all of the time, that is been tasked with specifically looking at the unmasking. So I want to go right to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., because Than, this is the unique part. We've been going through this. We've been, as we discussed the unmasking and when those names were declassified with the dates of the unmasking, just with Mike Flynn, that's what we saw is the snapshot of Mike Flynn's unmasking request. And the final request that we saw that was declassified was the request made by Joe Biden. And it wasn't Joe Biden's chief of staff, so we're not like imputing that to Joe Biden. It literally said Joe Biden on the document, and now we have a U.S. attorney who's being tasked with specifically looking at this issue.
Yeah, Joe Biden made the last request, and then President Obama's chief of staff made a request, I would say, on his behalf, Jordan. But look, what this breaking news tells me is the significant focus that the Attorney General Bill Barr is putting on this. I mean, you mentioned the three U.S. attorneys, but when you take an investigation as comprehensive as John Durham's had been, which is looking at the broader investigation, and within that, the Attorney General finds the need to appoint another U.S. attorney, John Bash, to specifically look at the political operatives that were unmasking. And you couple that, Jordan, with the fact that next week on June 3rd, the Senate Judiciary Committee, the first witness that they're going to have after they issued those subpoenas from Lindsey Graham is going to be the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who, Jordan, went ahead, as you know, and appointed the special counsel, even though we now know from the 302s from the FBI that he knew at that point that Donald Trump was not a suspect. When you look at the totality of all of those pieces, Jordan, what this tells me is that the Attorney General is extremely focused on this. And I've got to tell you, I think there are going to be indictments and prosecutions that come out of this. And specifically, we are going to see the political operatives that misuse their office to unmask. We're going to see them come to light. Just the last example, Jordan, the ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power. Why does she have to be doing this? That's what John Bash is going to be asking.
Yeah, it's the Department of Justice, through their spokesperson, they're correct. They said, you know, it's not that the unmasking is inherently illegal, but that doesn't make all of the unmasking requests legal. And they are highly suspect because of the timeline. Why are they doing this days before they leave? Days before they leave, the American people decided who they wanted to run their country next. You have a transition that is part, it's kind of a government process. You start getting security briefings, classified briefings, you get up to speed. But you're, of course, are going to have different policies. That's up to you. You were chosen by the people, especially in the world of foreign policy, where you have the most power as the commander-in-chief and, of course, then his appointed advisors to advise the commander-in-chief. We'll be back taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Folks, if you're watching on Facebook, Periscope, share this broadcast with your friends and family. You can click that share button now. There's a lot to break down here because you have Rod Rosenstein testifying next week, scheduled to testify before Senate Judiciary Committee and Chairman Graham. And this is, again, a high-profile person because he authorized the appointment of the special counsel. So you had Jeff Sessions recuse, and Rod Rosenstein is the Deputy Attorney General. Appointed the special counsel. But he had access to a lot of information. And so he's going to be questioned about this. And this is a public hearing, by the way, next week. So this is not something that's just behind closed doors. This is public. And again, it's all about building, kind of figuring out all of these pieces here to the various parts. You realize with the Obama administration, up until the last moments that they were in power, they were utilizing their function of government to undermine the incoming president. Whether or not it's illegal is what the U.S. attorneys are looking at, or is it laws that need to be changed? Think about this. FISA is dead. Realize that for a minute. I mean, Than, I'm going to go to Wes Smith in a moment because I want to get his comments on FISA. I want to get his comments on the classified. The fact that the FISA has not been extended and that Nancy Pelosi pulled that, the president of the United States, because there were not enough safeguards put in, as we talked about early on. This is, again, it's a story that's breaking through a little bit in the news, but because of COVID-19 and the other issues that are affecting, the economic issues that are affecting folks, it's not getting as much attention as it would have if this was a normal news cycle. But that is a huge deal that has just died in Capitol Hill.
Yeah, President Trump tweeted out that he was going to veto the FISA reauthorization, and that effectively killed it in the House of Representatives as there were not enough votes from Democrats alone. Even Democrats, Jordan, in the United States House realize that there's a problem with FISA to the extent that it's not going to be reauthorized. And look, there's a couple of components to this, but ultimately, I think it's important for people to understand that despite all of these abuses, Jordan, the White House was willing to engage in negotiations to get FISA reauthorized because it recognized that there is a legitimate role to play. But look, there are concerns on both sides of this, from the law enforcement side and then also from the side that it has been abused. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the protections that needed to go into the program did not get in there sufficiently, and the president felt the need to issue the veto threat. And you're right, Jordan, they had to pull it from the floor of the House. And I've got to tell you, once you pull a vote like that from the floor of the House, it becomes very difficult to put it back on. They tried to put it back on today, Jordan, but then they did a whip count, a vote count, did not have the votes to pass. So as of this moment, yes, the reauthorization, it's dead.
That I'm going to go right to Wes Smith. Wes, with your military background, classified information, we've kind of gone through this before, but you add all this together, the country and representatives from, by the way, this bipartisan opposition. It was some of the most progressive left-leaning members of Congress, the Progressive Caucus, with some of the more conservative members of Congress coming together in light of President Trump's comments and saying, this is not the way we're going to reauthorize this court system. And this comes on the same day that we find out a new U.S. attorney is appointed, West, to look into specifically this unmasking, which goes into the whole point of getting these FISA warrants, getting these wiretaps and on these phone conversations in the first place.
Yeah, and the FISA law served a good purpose. You know, this was really about post 9/11, and it was designed in order to protect the citizens, the homeland of the United States. But the law is very, very clear. There are protections built into the law that protect U.S. citizens who are incidentally caught up in these surveillance schemes. And that's what has been violated here. The faith and trust of the American people has been violated along with the FISA law, because the law is also very clear. It is against the law. It's not just unethical. It is against the law to use a FISA warrant for political or personal purposes. And when you read through the law, unmasking even is allowed, but it's allowed in the same way that classified documents are allowed to be read. And that is, there has to be legitimate national security concerns, but also the person requesting the unmasking has to have a legitimate need to know. There is no way that all of these people in the closing days of the Obama administration had a need to know who they were unmasking, in this case, General Flynn. This corruption is absolutely incredible. And each day that goes by, I'm more and more shocked as a person who served in the military and who had a security clearance. Thank God for Richard Grenell, who is bringing a lot of this into light, because part of what went on in the closing days of the Obama administration, they did not think that Donald Trump wanted to be the president. They assumed Hillary Clinton would be the president, and none of this would ever come to light. So they really, really were, it wasn't a matter that they objected to breaking the law or do something shady. They just figured they'd never get caught.
Well, what's interesting is, of course, this gets highly partisan. And so you've got Senator Mark Warner who's criticizing Rick Grenell, and Rick Grenell fired off another letter that has now been unclassified, and he said back to him, declassifying those who sought to unmask is no risk to sources or methods. You know, we hear about that a lot, and especially with all these hearings that have been sometimes behind closed doors, sometimes public. Now it's saying, and then he tells Mark Warner, you're complaining about declassification of identities of, by the way, these are people like Joe Biden. These are people subject to Freedom of Information Act requests. And it's again, saying it's puzzling that your letter initially complains about the declassification of the identity of unmaskers, a declassification that posed no conceivable risk to sources or methods, only to then request the declassification of actual intelligence reports.
Yeah, very strong letter from Rick Grenell to the Vice Chairman Mark Warner. Jordan, he went on to say, cherry-picking certain documents for release while attacking the release of others that don't fit your political narrative is part of the problem the American people have with Washington, D.C. I got to tell you, for my money, in the few weeks that Rick Grenell was the Director of National Intelligence, he did an incredible job of sorting these two things. You do want to protect sources and methods, so the underlying intelligence reports are the ones you want to be most hesitant to release, and you want to shed the most most sunshine on which elective officials were engaged in which type of nefarious activities. Going back to what Wes talked about, why does a deputy mission need to have the identity of General Flynn? Why does the Treasury Secretary need to have the identity of General Flynn? Rick Grinnell, Jordan, did a very good job parsing those two things and releasing the appropriate things. And I will tell you, it now looks like the underlying transcripts of General Flynn's call with Ambassador Kislyak have now been declassified, and it will be up to the incoming Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, to determine whether or not those are going to be made public. I don't think any of the left in Washington, D.C. is sad to see Rick Grinnell go, but I will tell you this. I know John Ratcliffe a little. I don't think they're going to be very excited to see him come in either.
No, and I think, Wes, I go to you. I think Rick Grinnell has done the right thing here. He, as an acting DNI, but he was confirmed as ambassador to Germany, and he has said, you know, he's stepping away. He declassified the next round of this, which are actually the phone call transcripts between Mike Flynn and the Russian ambassador at the time to the United States, and what was unmasked. So what they were reading and utilizing for basically the basis of what led to a special counsel, even an impeachment, you could say. And to me, the fact is, they know who John Ratcliffe is because they were scared of him the first time he got nominated for this position.
Yeah, and this has lent itself to just blatant, really, really ugly partisan politics. It truly has. I think Rick Grinnell's done the right thing. I think Ratcliffe will continue to do the right thing. As these documents are released and more info comes out, like I said, those of us who've been around for a while are really, truly shocked. For example, one of the things that got released last week was that in a White House briefing with outgoing President Obama, the FBI director, James Comey, advises the outgoing president of the United States to withhold information about Russia from the incoming national security director, General Flynn. I mean, that puts the national security of the United States at risk. He's advising the president to withhold information. I mean, this is absolutely unheard of. And this was done in the Oval Office with President Obama and his closest aides. As you uncover more and more of this, for example, John Brennan, you know, really hiding the fact that General Flynn had legitimate reasons to talk with the Russians because he was the incoming national security director, on and on and on. It's really shocking. And I think we have to get to the bottom of this. And this is why Grinnell's doing such a service. And I think Ratcliffe will too. And that is because the U.S. citizens need to be reassured at some level that they can trust their government. We need to also, protect the integrity of our elections and so on and on.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be able to trust the intelligence community if we're going to ultimately reauthorize something like FISA even again. Now, I've been someone personally advocating, I've said on this radio broadcast, if they want to do like a short-term stopgap, a very short-term, but that long-term, nothing should get reauthorized. It's not fully basically redone as a process. And of course, that will take bipartisan work, but there was enough bipartisan opposition that as of right now, FISA is dead. Now, that's not necessarily good for the intelligence community long term, but they've got to prove to us now that we can trust them. 1-800-684-3110. Talk to us on the air. Your comments, your questions, 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, The ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
All right, folks, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. So to remind you, too, I mean, in the next few days, even next week, you know, Monday, we have that deadline. The judge in the Flynn case has got to respond. He's got the attorney, I guess, writing a response. I mean, this is very bizarre, and we've gotten into that. We'll get into it more when we have more information there to analyze. On Wednesday, you have Rod Rosenstein testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thursday, they're going to vote on subpoenas on the Senate Judiciary Committee. The Rod Rosenstein testimony is public. That is not behind closed doors. And think about the issues that have arisen since we had, you know, impeachment inquiries. All these different issues. We've learned about allegations of 25th Amendment. And is he trying to invoke? Is he wearing a wire? No one's checking me. We know now that Mike Flynn was set up that very similar way, in a very similar, and that even the kind of way that the Mueller team was looking at President Trump was also similar. They knew they had nothing. Do you realize the entire second volume of the Mueller report is about obstructing something that you didn't do? I mean, think about that for a moment. Sathan, to me, this is why Bob Mueller's legacy is that potentially the FISA court will not be reauthorized, which may not be good for the country long term if we can't figure out how to get our intelligence community back on track. In a bipartisan way that, you know, progressive liberals and conservative Republicans are not, they are coming together to say, no, there's not enough reform here to trust this in the hands of anyone, especially because you had threats like Senator Chuck Schumer saying, you threaten that Intel committee, they'll take you down.
It's also why next week's testimony from Rod Rosenstein is going to be so interesting, Jordan, because Rod Rosenstein knew exactly what you just said when he appointed the special counsel to take a look at this. We now have seen the 302s. We know that the FBI had briefed Rod Rosenstein and told him that there was no there, that Donald Trump was not a suspect. And yet, even with that information, he went ahead and appointed the special counsel. Jordan, that is going to be, in my view, just an impossible question to answer when he's in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I would tell you, this. I mean, I've been around these sort of dances between the legislative branch and executive branch officials a long time, and I don't think it's any accident that Rod Rosenstein is coming the day before the vote on the subpoenas is supposed to happen. Remember, one of those subpoenas is for him and for his documents. Jordan, I will tell you, I think his performance next Wednesday depends whether or not he is in that list and gets a subpoena. And if he is not forthcoming, Jordan, if he doesn't answer those questions that you're posing, if he does not provide the committee all of the information that they need, I suspect the subpoena for him and his documents will still be issued, and he will have to come back again and answer those questions. We'll see on Wednesday. We get our first look.
Wes, let me get you a comment on this. I just want to remind people what Chuck Schumer said, because I think it plays into everything. These legacies, these long-term members of Congress, I think what they are doing is actually destroying the intel community instead of working together. But these threats that they made are so extreme. Take a listen. This is back from 2017. Now, we told you, draining the swamp, it does not happen in 6 months. So,
let me tell you, you take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
You know what it is, Wes, is that he was bold enough to say, bring it on, and I'll take your incoming. He did. The impeachment, the Mueller investigation, the that came out to nothing, and that it, now when you really are able to step back and put it all together, Wes, and then you hear a comment like that, you realize what Chuck Schumer is saying is they'll just make stuff up about you and try to take you down through instead of, even though they won't be able to prove in in any kind of legitimate legal way that you actually did what they started the investigation over, they'll get you on obstructing an investigation that of no illegal conduct, which is the Mike Flynn issue, is that in his situation, it was, how can you mislead the FBI if there's no purpose for what the FBI is even asking you about?
Yeah, and if you believe what Chuck Schumer is saying, I don't believe much of what he says most of the time, if the intel community is doing this kind of thing, that is not a reason not to investigate them. That's a reason to have some moral courage and some political courage and to investigate them. But, you know, the bottom line is this, Jordan, and that is investigating law enforcement agencies, judicial review, and congressional oversight, which is what we're talking about, all of these are part of the checks and balances that we need in order to make sure that individual agents and individual agencies do not violate the spirit and the letter of the law.
Yeah, I'm going to take a phone call. Dennis in Oregon online too. Dennis, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, Jordan. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, this whole thing appointing this new guy to the case of the unmasking, I was just thinking, when Sessions was before he had recused himself, didn't he appoint a U.S. attorney, I think, from Utah to check into something? And I've never heard about what
that U.S. attorney.
That.
So you're right. So he was appointed by Attorney General Sessions at the time, so former Attorney General, and he's the U.S. attorney of Utah, John Huber. He was looked at two things. He was looking at the Clinton. Remember all the nuclear issues there and Uranium One, all those that deal, and whether or not there was enough information there. Remember, they're looking at criminal actions, not necessarily bad conduct that could even lead to your removal from your job or recommendations from, like in Andy McCabe's case, from the professional the office there of personnel at the FBI recommending his firing over the leaking of class of information. So he was looking at that, plus he did start the investigation to the origins of this Russia issue. That was his investigation closed. John Durham moved in, and he took over the Russia part of that. But what the Department of Justice, let me play their spokesperson for you, because what they're saying is they wanted a U.S. attorney with John Durham looking at this giant now. You realize the amount of people. I mean, if there's six Treasury Department officials, the amount of paper you're looking at, and we talk about a lot of the high-profile names. There's a lot of folks in there, too, that you wonder, like, okay, that deputy was also putting in these requests, too. So he wanted to give this specific task about unmasking that happened right before and then, of course, after the election leading up to the inaugural. That comment alone for me, the fact that I can make that comment based on fact that what we know has been already released from the Intel Committee should send shivers down the spine of most Americans. It's why members of Congress came together in a bipartisan way to oppose FISA's reauthorization at this point. Take a listen to the Department of Justice spokesperson.
John Durham, as part of his investigation, had been looking at the issue of unmasking, and the Attorney General determined that certain aspects of unmasking needed to be reviewed separately as a support to John Durham's investigation. So he tapped John Bash, one of our U.S. attorneys out of Texas, to do just that. We know that unmasking inherently isn't wrong, but certainly the frequency, the motivation, and the reasoning behind unmasking can be problematic.
Wes, I want to get your final comments on this. We only have about 45 seconds left, and our second half hour is coming up. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. That's 1-800-684-3110. People are dealing with a lot of issues right now, depending on what state they live in and what phases of reopening. But these big issues, to me, I think we've got to decide as a country what we're going to do on these issues. All right. Come back. We can grab Wes second half hour. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We're taking your calls on Jay Sekulow Live. Second half hour coming up. It's very important news, and we're trying to break this down for you because you're not getting this much analysis anywhere else.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, folks, we're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let me just kind of reset the stage for you if you're just joining us on Jay Sekulow Live. It's our second half hour, and we're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. I want to get your thoughts on this, too. In light of, you know, where you are in the country, we're on in basically every state in the country, people are dealing with lots of different issues, depending on where you are, where your business is located, even inside your state, what city you're in can be impacting you significantly now. But these issues in Washington, D.C. have not stopped. You know, U.S. attorneys don't stop. The Department of Justice does not shut down. These are the essential activities and functions of our government. Certainly, they've looked a little bit different the past couple of months. But as we're starting to come out of this at a more nationwide level, I think now it's down to about 44 states that are there's pretty significantly along the way in some kind of reopening to some extent, is that, you know, you're starting to have the hearings back at the Senate Judiciary Committee, and whether some of those senators are not there, whether there's – I don't know, Than, do we know yet if this will be all in person, or is this still going to be like – remote, because this is, again, it's not behind closed doors in a classified setting, so you wouldn't have the, because of public hearings. So is Rod Rosenstein going to be in Washington D.C.? He lives in that area. That's where he was before as a U.S. attorney. So I guess he could make that trip easily. But what is the kind of status of those hearings?
Yeah, it's not set in stone yet, Jordan, and some of that conversation is ongoing. The people I talked to this morning said the expectation is they do expect Rod Rosenstein will be there in person as well as Chairman Graham. They expect that participation from the senators, though, Jordan, will be a mix of both. Some of them will be from satellite. And again, that's a little bit fluid and probably won't be firm literally until day of.
I think I want to go back to Wes Smith here because, Wes, I look at all of these issues in we break it down for folks, but then you do have to put it back together, kind of the puzzle. To me, what happened with FISA specifically was another move by the kind of, I'd say the kind of Washington, D.C. insiders, Nancy Pelosi type, hey, there's Republicans that are part of that world too, that thought, because of what's happening in the country, we could just kind of get this on through. No one's going to really focus on this. The president's focused on other matters, economic matters. And suddenly, no, that didn't work.
Yeah, it's definitely the deep state at work for sure. And the thing about this whole this FISA abuse, and that's what it is, you know, they misled the FISA court, they unmasked people, you know, without warrant, and on the list is gone. It violated not only the FISA law, it violated not only, you know, the faith of the American people as all of this comes out, but also it puts our national security at risk because we need to be able to investigate foreign terrorists. And that's why the FISA was in order to investigate people who would do us harm from foreign countries or foreigners who are in the continental United States. And so by violating this, and then the difficulty with which we're able to do, you know, passing new FISA legislation, it puts our national security at risk. We don't need FISA violated. We don't need the corruption that has gone on, but we do need to be able to investigate people who are a threat to the United States, which is why FISA and the FISA courts were set up to begin with. You know, going back to part of this, part of what Grinnell and all these documents that have coming out just very quickly, Jordan, that I was so shocked at as well, was that whenever James Comey and Brennan and Clapper were briefing the incoming administration, the Trump administration, they did not brief them about the secret investigation that was going on regarding the Trump administration. Yeah. I don't think anywhere in the history of the United States has there been an ongoing investigation that they say is of critical importance where you do not brief the incoming president. They deliberately, and this goes back to President Obama, they deliberately withheld critical information regarding national security from the incoming president because they were actually going to investigate him.
Listen, they think that they thought that they ran the world. I mean, you see how, again, when you see that they have this whole time, until recently, you know, they were all commenting on Twitter, they were CNN commentators, and they were denying all these things because they never thought that anybody would put their names out there and tell people, hey, what were they up to? We're going to take your calls. This, how important is this issue to you and how your members of Congress are responding to? 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Listen, I think when we get into this, it's Greg Jarrett of Fox News. So if you're watching us on Facebook and Periscope, and we encourage you to share this with your friends and family. But if you're not, he said in a Fox News, you know, we're focusing a lot on Mike Flynn, obviously, because his was the most high profile because they actually tried to bring, threaten him with like criminal charges and all this kind of issue. As we know now, they wrote in their notes, hey, what's the purpose of going in? Do we just want to get him fired? Do we just want to ruin his life? Do we want to get him, you know, to misstate something about phone calls that we're listening into that we have the transcript of that he doesn't, by the way? I mean, think about this for a moment. You're the incoming national security advisor. You're talking to people. You're getting classified briefings at that point. The president has chosen you. He was elected. He's the president-elect at that time. And Greg Jarrett asked you, how many other people? Well, we also know the president of the United States. Because this was all to get to him, ultimately, because of the special counsel. Jim Comey said it. Remember, he said, I leaked my notes. Where are all his notes here? I mean, Wes, that's what I want. I want to know, where are Jim Comey's notes? I know other members of Congress, Wes, have talked about this, but if he was willing to leak those, how is he going to refuse a subpoena on his, if he did take these notes all of the time and he didn't just make them up, when he was under fire, so that he could get a special counsel appointed. I would love to see his notes on when President Obama started briefing the Deputy Attorney General at the time. So the same person that had Rod Rosenstein, Sally Yates, who became an acting Attorney General for a short period of time, and until she said she would not carry out a duly elected executive order that was found to be constitutional, of course, by the Supreme Court of the United States. You put this all together, Wes, though, I mean, it is, again, you realize the other folks who were targeted here, it's the president of the United States that the American people elected.
Yeah. They were using Flynn and anyone else that they could to try and get at the president of the United States. And think about that, Jordan. What did they want to do? Well, first of all, they did not want him to get elected. But then after he was elected, these are supposedly legitimate law enforcement and intelligence community officials who are trying to actually usurp a duly elected president of the United States. That, to me, on the face of it, is criminal, as well as being unpatriotic. They are trying to actually take
a little issue there with your connection. We can try to reconnect with Wesley again one more time. We'll see if that works. 1-800-684-3110. Let me go to the phones. Gary in New York on line 3. Gary, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Yeah, I appreciate what you guys do in the courts and on the air.
Thank you very much,
Gary. My question to you is, so much of these things that are going on started with the initial filing in the FISA court with false information. So the question is, why aren't the judges holding them in contempt of court?
Well, I think, listen, this is all being looked at now. So, one, the U.S. you've got U.S. attorneys involved, two still involved, one who's kind of assumed. You have folks like Susan Rice writing emails to herself 2 weeks after a meeting saying everything in the meeting was perfect. It's bizarre. They were using their timing. Those were done literally the day of the inaugural. I mean, Than, to me, this is what is so absurd, that so much of the media has just accepted as, well, you know, so much of the media accepted what Chuck Schumer says, which is that the intel community should somehow be able to, I guess, ruin lives, take presidents out who are actually elected by the people. But maybe this is their own worst undoing, because they now don't have those powers. They've been stripped of the powers of FISA. So if they tried to do anything like that right now, it'd be illegal. They'd be violating the law and the Fourth Amendment. There's nothing special in the law for any of this now because of their actions.
That's right, Jordan, and we've got the documents to prove it. I mean, some of them came from the public investigation. Some of them came from the private FOIA investigations that we and others have done. Jordan, let me just piece three of these together. I mean, we've got this document from July 31st, 2016 of Peter Strzok opening Crossfire Hurricane, and then we've got the FBI memo on January 4th, right here, January 4th, 2017, of the FBI field office recommending closure of Crossfire Razor, which was the look into General Flynn. And then the meeting the very next day that we have, you mentioned Susan Rice's memo that was written on January 20th, but it was written 2 weeks after the meeting in question, which happened on January 5th, 2017, the day after Peter Strzok overrode that recommendation from the field office. And Jordan, we saw that debate back and forth between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page on how to edit out the other FBI agents 302 from those interviews. Jordan, I don't think that's an accident. I think in that January 5th meeting inside the White House with President Obama and Vice President Biden, this was the topic of conversation. And Peter Strzok felt like he could override the FBI field office because of what happened in that meeting. And Jordan, that is why 2 weeks later on January 20th, Susan Rice felt it necessary to go back in after the fact and rewrite the history of what happened in that meeting. We've got the documents. Now they have to answer the questions.
Folks, we're starting to see the culmination of all of this. You know, I think the fact we come back we can play more. Do we have some of the KT McFarland bites? I mean, this is someone else. You know, we talk about the victims of this policy disputes leading to people being pressured by the FBI as they somehow need to be removed from their positions because of policy disputes. Now, listen, the president of the United States can decide he doesn't want someone as an advisor anymore because of policy disputes. It's not supposed to be the intel community taking people out, undermining the president's own advisors because they don't like their policy views. And now look at what they've done. Look at what you reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. And the fact is that I didn't even think we get to a point where FISA could not necessarily get through with reforms, something, even if it was renamed, I talked about, you know, just coming up with a new name, coming up with new processes. And you realize what they've done. They're draining their own swamp now because you realize how bad of actors they are. Let's take a listen to KT McFarland.
In the unmaskings, was that fateful December 29th phone call when General Flynn talked to the Russian ambassador, was that unmasked? If not, why not? We know it was recorded. We know there's a transcript of it. And if it wasn't unmasked by the NSA, who did the recording? The CIA, the FBI? A lot of unanswered questions that I hope we'll find the answer to soon.
I mean, this is, again, it goes to all the points. And then, Thayan, I just want to get your reaction. I mean, because folks like, actually, is Wes back with us? Wes, your reaction, because people like KT McFarland, they also experienced this. They were also the victims of this policy disputes with this intel world, who then decided to try to take them out. And like they all said, if it was just getting them removed, that was good enough for them. If they could go further like they did with Mike Flynn, that was great.
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about career people that are supposed to be professional, who they disagree with a presidential administration's policy, or their officials are trying to actually undermine them. And I apologize for the bad connection on Skype. What I was saying whenever we talked to one another is that, think about this. You know, they did not brief the Trump administration 4 days before he was inaugurated on any aspects of this investigation. And the reason, first of all, that's unprecedented in American history. You always, on all matters of national security, the incoming administration has a full read on everything. They did not brief the Trump administration on many parts of this. And part of the reason for that was they were actually investigating the incoming president of the United States, using Michael Flynn and others to try and get dirt on the new president. Unbelievable.
And Thayan, I think this goes past partisan politics to me. This is kind of old Washington, new Washington. President Trump was certainly new Washington. He was there. He was elected by the American people, chosen by the American people to shake things up, to change the status quo, draining the swamp. He was public about it. The swamp includes both sides of the aisle. But you've also seen in this time period kind of some new Republicans come to town, some who have also realized, well, this is like gotten out of control, who have been there for longer. And even with FISA, I'm sure it didn't make any of those progressives happy, but they really couldn't justify their positions if they did go along with just fully reauthorizing this with no major reforms.
There's been an awful lot, Jordan, of the Washington institution protecting the institution at all costs, even though when there is every reason to do reforms. And look, when it comes to FISA, look, after what has gone on and how many people were involved, I really do think that reforms maybe need to go too far initially, and then maybe you can build it back as trust is earned. And, you know, for my money, as you look at this, I just don't understand why we wouldn't have an advocate for the target of a FISA application in every single hearing that can see every single piece of documentation. The abuse has gone that far. Jordan, I actually think there's a real case to be made that FISA should actually exclude U.S. citizens altogether as well. I think it should certainly exclude candidates for federal office. Look, eventually, Jordan, once they prove they can handle this authority a little bit better, maybe you can build it back. But when we know this type of abuse has occurred, shame on us if we don't reform it to the extent where U.S. citizens are first and foremost protected.
All right, folks, we come back, we'll take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll take your calls on Jay Sekulow Live. Stay up to date, too, on all the issues we're working on, ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We'll be right back. Again, take your phone calls, questions, comments.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
So we now know, Than, we can confirm now that Senator Graham, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I'm sure there will be other senators too, but we know Senator Graham and Rod Rosenstein will be in person. So when people watch that next week, it will not be what we've kind of gotten used to seeing, whether it's on TV or you know, broadcast utilizing Zoom. It's going to be in person, easy to follow. And I think at a time when, again, people obviously – you've got to deal with the economic issues people are facing and what kind of point they're at in the country. But also, people haven't stopped caring about these issues, because that's why, if they are supported President Trump before, they wanted to see him take on the swamp. And I think they realized, you know, what that entailed. So now we're going to get to see Senator Graham and other members of the Congress do this in person again, which also I think is a good thing for the country to see.
Yeah, Jordan, I think it's important for this hearing. I mean, look, I think the Deputy Attorney General showing up in person to answer questions in person about why the origins of Crossfire Hurricane, why the special counsel was appointed, even though he knew that Donald Trump was not a target. I think that happening in person is a good thing. And yes, the Senate Judiciary Committee has confirmed that he has agreed to be in the room. Chairman Graham will be in the room. The committee is still going to make accommodations for other senators who feel better, you know, participating remotely. That will be an option for other senators. But for me, Jordan, at least knowing that those key questions will be asked in person and will have to be answered in person, I actually think that really is important, and it adds to the gravity of the situation. The gravity, Jordan, which is appropriate. I mean, these are serious questions the former Deputy Attorney General has to answer, and I'm glad he's showing up to do it.
I think this is an interesting question. Francine on Facebook wrote in, Jordan, do you think this is a positive thing that we see a lack of kind of public movement in this case, because more information is being gathered to potentially bring greater charges? It's a high bar. You know, when you appoint U.S. attorneys, you do not appoint them to write Mueller reports. Dan, I mean, that's the important thing. You appoint them to look at whether or not there's criminal charges. And I think Attorney General Barr, unlike the former, by the way, people that were previously in these positions, has a high bar for that. Is that we're not, you know, you can change policies. We're seeing that with the FISA issue play out as well. And it's not like someone like Senator Lindsey Graham would be totally opposed to reauthorizing FISA. At the same time, because he's worked in that national security world, and he's these are kind of top issues for him. At the same time, they are realizing the abuses that went on here. But it's still it's a high bar, but you would not utilize U.S. attorneys. And it's changed Washington. I mean, you look at how silent these folks have gotten. Except for those who have kind of been forced to respond and explain themselves. The rest, who were acting high and mighty, no longer are doing that.
Yeah, Jordan, I personally do see it as a good sign there hasn't been much publicly, because look, if you were going to try to slap on the wrist those people who were involved, you might not have the need for so much privacy. But if you're going to address the severity of the abuses that we saw here appropriately and fully, you would need that secrecy. You would need that privacy to build the evidence, to build the case. And look, I come back to Director Comey. If he is going to so flippantly and arrogantly abuse the powers that he had, release the memos of the private conversations he had with the president, then go on national TV and laugh, ha, 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 that I just sent a couple of guys over to the White House because I thought I could get away with it, and I'm going to ruin the reputation of an American citizen, even though I didn't have any information. Jordan, the severity of those abuses are so significant that I do think this investigation is warranted. And the one other witness, Jordan, that I'm really interested in seeing if he talks is this FBI agent, Joe Pinka, who went over to do those interviews with Peter Strzok, wrote the initial 302s, and then had Peter Strzok rewrite his work. I think that agent knows an awful lot. And Jordan, I don't know anything about him, but if he acted on the up and up, I would think he would be desperate to clear his name and right those wrongs. And I think he would have a lot of stories to tell, and they would be firsthand. They would not be speculation.
Yeah, this is where Jim Comey, I think, really stepped into it, because he did the interview. He goes on MSNBC, take a listen, Bite 11. I just want to reset this for you, because this is not true what he said, Bite 11.
You look at this White House now, and it's hard to imagine two FBI agents ending up in the same room. How did that happen?
I sent them. Something I probably wouldn't have done, or maybe gotten away with in a more organized investigation, a more organized administration, in the George W. Bush administration, for example, or the Obama administration. There was process. And so if the FBI wanted to send agents into the White House itself to interview a senior official, you would work through the White House counsel, and there'd be discussions and approvals and who would be there. And I thought, it's early enough, let's just send a couple guys over.
Then there was a White House counsel. And Don McGahn, who, by the way, Jim Comey, I'm sure knew because he was part of the Bush administration. He is a well-known, high-profile Washington, D.C. attorney. He's worked for the RNC, he's worked for as private counsel before at mega law firms. Okay, so these are the part of Washington that would know each other. Jim Comey would have known Don McGahn. He was a name already associated with President Trump during the transition, became White House counsel, involved, you know, in the initial judicial nominations. They knew he was there. They decided not to follow the rules of the game.
This is one of the most offensive sound bites I can literally imagine, Jordan. First of all, for the reason that you point out, Don McGahn was the White House counsel. He was there for this precise purpose, to consider these type of matters. James Comey knew that full well. He knew it was his obligation to send it through Don McGahn. He chose not to because of his arrogance and his hubris. And here's the other part of it that really bothers me, Jordan. Even if what James Comey had said was true, which it was not, but even if it wasn't, if there wasn't the proper protocol to go through to the White House, that does not mean that he has free rein. It was James Comey's job, Jordan, to protect the right of American citizens. It was his job to make sure that General Flynn's rights were protected under the law. Not only did he not do that, he intentionally didn't do it, and then he bragged about it afterwards. Jordan, that's why I believe that he should be the primary target of John Durham's investigation.
All right, let me go to Amy's phone call line, too. Amy, welcome to JSecio Live. You're on the air.
Hi, I have a question about the timeline here with the Treasury spying. And I'm wondering, was this done under Rosenstein's watch? And is Steve Mnuchin as a part of that time frame?
These requests were made in the Obama administration. This was happening, the requests that we know about. And again, this is what they have decided to declassify. And remember, U.S. attorneys also are getting information. So at the same time, you've got kind of this dual, more than dual, actually, because you've also got Senate Judiciary Committee, you've got House committees. Looked at this as well in the last few years. But we're now seeing a much different picture come together. So much of that focus was on Mueller initially, and then it was about a phone call the president had with 30 other people listening in and a Ukrainian president that they tried to, you know, move forward. Not hearing a lot from the Adam Schiff types of the world, Dan, these days.
It might be the first good move he's made in a while, Jordan. I probably wouldn't be talking right now, but I bet you he won't be able to resist for long. I bet you we'll hear from him. But no, to answer the caller's question, the Secretary of the Treasury that made these unmasking requests was Jacob Lew, and Jordan, the dates of them were December 14th, 2016,
yep,
and January 12th, 2017. Why would the Secretary of Treasury, a week before inauguration, need to unmask the identity of General Flynn? I think I can guess the answer.
All right, folks. We're going to follow this closely. We're awaiting the president's executive order, too. We'll analyze that tomorrow on JSecio Live. Follow us, too, aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Information about new cases we're working on are up at aclj.org. We'll discuss more of those tomorrow as well. on the broadcast, but I encourage you, check out ACLJ.org if you can. Support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. Our attorneys are working hard, folks, throughout this entire process, and we're around the country and around the world. ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.